He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Professor John F. Marcuso joins us from Tokyo, Japan, and he helped do the research, one of his colleagues, for a huge cover story that was in one of the largest English language journals in the country. That's the Tokyo Journal, the City Magazine. I thought it was very fair, and they sourced some of my 9/11 films and some other films as well. But again, this is just a very fair publication that is read all over Japan. And so I wanted to talk about yourself and your colleagues and some of the things you experienced doing the research and assisting this publication in doing this report, and how the Japanese have responded to this, Professor. So please tell us the whole story about how you got into this and then what happened.
September 11th?
Yes, September 11th.
Well, I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised from Brooklyn, New York. Saw the Twin Towers go up when I was in elementary school, fascinated by them, not exactly loved. As you have pointed out a number of times, towers took a long time for New Yorkers to really fall in love with. On the night for us, but of course the morning in New York of September 11th, a friend of mine gave me a call and said, asked me to turn on the TV, and there was the North Tower burning. And it was a very surreal picture, because there was no sound, just the long shot of the tower burning. And when I was on the phone, I said, "Well, hey, you know, there are fires in the tower, in those towers all the time." My brother, his at the time girlfriend, now wife, so his mother-in-law, worked as a security person, so she knew quite a lot about the goings-on at the towers. And one day, this is quite a number of years ago, we were getting some tickets. There was a ticket center, and I was with his then-girlfriend, and she was talking about all the different goings-on and the bomb scares every single day and the fires in the building. So when I'm looking at this long shot that was being broadcast live on Japanese TV, I didn't think anything of it. It's a large fire. But just a minute after picking up the phone and turning on the TV, there came out of the right side of the screen that silhouette of the airliner crashing into the other tower, with the fireball erupting in the background. And you know, when dealing with Japanese, you know, you shouldn't expect, you know, quick answers. I was like, "Well, what was that? I don't know. Was that a plane? I don't know. What do you think?" Something was going on. I said, "Look, thank you very much for informing me about this. I have to get off right away." I hung up, called up my father, got through. He picked up. He said, "You know, the TV just went out. Don't know what's going on. I heard a couple of explosions." And I said, "Look, I am looking at a live picture right now that's being broadcast on national TV, and I just saw a plane. I did not at the time. I didn't know it was a jetliner. I just saw a plane crash into one of the towers, and the other one is on fire. Tell Paul, my brother, who is working right." In one or two buildings away, tell Paul, get him on the phone, tell him to get out of there as quickly as possible. I was very concerned about my brother because he's learning disabled. He is mentally retarded, borderline intelligence. He does have a job, very pleasant man. You can have conversations with him. But, you know, a person in his condition, if the schedule is disrupted in any way, you know, he panics. And my father, unfortunately, wasn't able to get him on the phone. And, of course, with what was going on over there, I mean, you know, there was bedlam. And after the towers, they were told in their building to stay put, which was, of course, a mistake. And when the towers fell, electricity went out. My brother, I was told later, was in one of these sub-basements. And he knew the labyrinth of tunnels and this maze of tunnels that were under all of these different buildings connecting together and going into shopping malls and subway stations, etc. And he basically groped his way through these tunnels, people falling over him, him getting banged up, groping his way to safety. In fact, a couple of weeks later, I'm in a magazine store looking at all the different coverage of September 11th. I pick up a People magazine, and you know, there is a picture of my brother walking over the Brooklyn Bridge. He's emotionally scarred, considering his fragile constitution.
When did you start questioning the official fable?
Immediately.
Tell us about that.
I saw these buildings go up. Of course, I was a child at the time, but I mean, I was fascinated. Being a child, you're interested in construction. I saw them going up. They were massive. I was a student in Spain and had lots of Spanish friends coming over, and I went up in them 20 times or so. And, you know, these were just absolutely humongous structures. And to see them fall so quickly, it made no sense to me. And, of course, it did. It looked like an implosion. But what really got me was how quickly, after the initial so-called attack, how quickly the U.S. government came out with not just pictures but profiles of these so-called hijackers. And
The second tower was hit, CIA director, then Director Tennant, was on television saying it was bin Laden.
Remarkable. Wow. Great intelligence. Why didn't they, you know, it just seemed logical. Well, if they have pictures and profiles of these people, why aren't they trailing them? How do they get on board?
And then it turns out with Able Danger and the rest of it, the government did, quote, try to stop the decoys. That's what they were patsies, and were ordered in Defense Intelligence, FBI, CIA to back off the case or they'd be arrested, and that's now all part of the record. So it took years, though, I guess, for this to percolate until you started to go public, or give us that timeline.
Oh no! Right away. It didn't smell right. And I have to thank you, Mr. Jones, because it was getting on the internet, and your site was one of the first that I had seen. And I have to admit, and you know, in all honesty, at first it was too overwhelming, and I had to back off. And I took about a month or two. And I went back because of being confronted with this information, it breaks down our whole understanding of government and society and who we are as a people.
It's world shaking. It's world shifting.
It is. So I had to step back. And
I remember. Day one, we had posted Operation Northwoods, the official government plan to carry out 9/11-style attacks. We had the insider trading. We had the fact that NORAD had stood down. We knew this within the first day, and we had that up on Infowars.com. What did you think when you were seeing this?
It was overwhelming, and I thought it was mind-blowing, and it put me in a state of complete confusion. That's why I had to back off and give myself some distance. But when I was talking to other people about this, I said, take a look at this site. Take a look at Infowars.com. And people, also had the same reaction. No, you're confused. You know, take a Valium. Take a vacation.
No, it's not true. It's impossible.
Because, as you said, it is. It's earth-shaking, all of this information, yes.
So, just within a month or so, you started to talk to friends. What brought you to then getting together with the media and calling the media? I mean, you did what good people should do. You contacted the press, you told us earlier, started asking to do reports. How long after 9/11 did you start that?
No, pretty quickly. But... people, it was too fresh. It was too new.
So it took 4 years for you to finally, how long ago did you finally contact the Tokyo Journal, and then how long was the education process where you showed them all these documentaries and documents and news articles?
Well, this was my summer project. So this past summer, I spoke to, I don't know how many hundreds of different publications. And they were the courageous people that took this up. And no, for them, it was immediate. Show them Road to Tyranny and Masters of Terror, some of your classic titles. And they just said, I need more. I want to see more, you know. And of course, getting on to the Infowars .com and Prison Planet, et cetera. And so they read all of that.
Well, this is exciting. I mean, to see fair media that looks at the facts and reports on it. I want to talk about the response you and others have gotten to the piece. What response to the Tokyo Journal, one of the big publications in the country, what response have they gotten to the piece?
Well, as soon as it was published, I was told that quite a number of foreign press were given, or in fact, actually had it already in their hands, printed out, photocopies of them. This was given out at another a media event that had nothing related to the Tokyo Journal article. So this was told me by a colleague that happened to be there and said, wow, all of these people had these independent news organizations had this article in hand, and they were talking about it.
Well, yeah, they talk about courage, and they talk about who, I mean, because we've had nothing but unfair national hit pieces here in the U.S. and predominantly in Europe, so this is big. Stay with us. Professor John F. Marcuso is our guest from Tokyo, Japan. This isn't just a story about 9/11. It's a testament to one man taking action, making phone calls, getting the press to cover something serious, and now this fair report out of the Tokyo Journal has gone worldwide, and millions and millions of people have read it on the Internet alone. Continuing, Professor, I want to talk about the response you guys got to this piece. Then let's get into what the piece actually covers and what you think the biggest smoking guns of 9/11 are. Then we'll take some calls. The toll-free number is 1-800-259-9231. But first let me ask, was anybody involved in this piece intimidated? Did anybody get calls from the government? Did anything like that happen?
Not that I know of. I tried to get the owner of Tokyo Journal, Stephen Hauser, on the phone. Unfortunately, he travels quite a bit inside of the country, so I don't have any information about that. But as far as I know, no.
Tell us more about the response you've witnessed to the piece.
Everyone that's seen it, just throws up their hands and says, knew it all the time, knew it all along. Of course, they're amazed that a publication like the Tokyo Journal would run a story like this. This magazine is subscribed to by all the major embassies and businesses in the country, so they have it in their libraries right now.
Here's an important question. Why do you think, and that's the same response I've gotten, knew it all along, why do you think the establishment thought they could get away with something this big and this obvious?
Because power corrupts absolutely. And these people, their egos are so huge that they think that us, the so-called downtrodden, can't figure it out. Or that we would be frightened and timid and just stay in our holes. And they are learning that no, that is not true. We will not.
Well, I agree with you. And if the elite thinks they can get away with this, I mean, it just shows how delusional they are. And it also tells the people we're dealing with hardcore, cold-blooded killers.
It's true. It is absolutely true, yes. And they will stop at nothing. And that's why we do we must get out onto the streets and talk to people and hand out information so people can go and become informed.
Talking to the average Japanese citizen there in Tokyo about 9/11, what's their take on it? Pre-Tokyo Journal article, now post-Tokyo Journal article.
That's a great question. The Japanese, Japan is a very complex culture, and it's a hierarchical culture. The Japanese are very well-educated people. They are very well-read people. Average Japanese businessman will read 5 or 6 different publications a day, a couple of novels a month. Sure, they read their manga, just to relax, but, they read the hardcore stuff as well, hard news, and, of course, a lot of alternative news. But when speaking to them, they're non-confrontational. Regardless of some of the myths and some of the misconceptions about the Japanese, and they really want to be left alone. Don't bother us. we don't want to know. We don't want to know the truth. And this is difficult, because when you confront them with something so huge, it really does rock their world. And on the one hand, yes, okay, we knew it all along, and they'll tell me that. Yes, of course, we knew that it was just too well planned. It went off without a hitch. It's impossible. It could not have happened. And I heard this day one. Talking to people, going into a coffee shop or whatever, and just like, oh, you're a foreigner. Where are you from? I'm from New York. Oh my God, you're from New York. Oh, what do you think about that? And asking them, well, what do you think about that? Oh, well, very strange, don't you think? So yeah, they can figure it out.
Well, I mean, I haven't been to Japan. I've just read the different international studies on the Japanese. Aren't they the most educated people in the world?
This is what they say, yes. And being here for 17 years, I would say, yes, they are. Very well educated.
So day one, they knew, because they're not idiots.
No.
Then you've got the average American, doesn't know how many continents there are, and can't find Iraq on a map. We'll be right back. For anyone that wonders why I spend so much time on 9/11, I do at least one or two segments a week on it, sometimes more, why all of my films, except for one in the last 4.5 years, have been about 9/11 and government-sponsored terror. Because look at the government. Every day they use it. When the police walk up to you in downtown Austin, to one of my employees 2 days ago, and say, you can't videotape the governor's mansion. Well, why can't I? It's free speech. I'm media. Well, it's a post-9/11 world. Oh, we have to warrantlessly take your bank account for the IRS. Well, why? Well, it's a post-9/11 world. Everything's a post-9/11 world, post-9/11 world. It is the foundational event for the Iraq invasion, for the Iran attack that's now on the front burner. Now, it is literally a crystallizing event, a seminal event that we've witnessed. Now, I know we have loaded phones. We'll be going to your calls here in just a few minutes. We're talking to John F. Marcuso. He is an American living in Japan for over a decade, and he teaches there at a local university. And he contacted the media and contacted, he said, over 100 publications. Finally got the Tokyo Journal to listen to him and one of his colleagues. The Tokyo Journal, the East City Magazine, is a huge nationwide publication, and it has sent shockwaves not just across Japan, but across the media in the world. John, do you want to get into more detail about how you talked to associates who said they were at other big media events and copies of the journal, even before it was out, were being handed out to media?
Well, Global Peace, you have a link on the InfoWars site. Is run by a woman by the name of Yumi Kikuchi, and she is just an amazing woman. Soon after September 11th, some of her friends put together this organization, and she gives countless lectures every year on just what you talk about, global elite, manufactured terrorism, whole idea of order out of chaos, etc. She was at a media event where she saw journalists with the photocopied of the article, of the Tokyo Journal article. That's the only one that I know of.
Well, that's exciting. I know it's been all over the web here in the U.S., and a lot of media people I've talked to have seen it. Where do you see 9/11 going? Because obviously, Bush's approval rating, even in Gallup poll, is at 30%. He's lost 16% of his conservative base that he said he couldn't lose in focus groups just in the last 2 weeks. He's in a free fall. Obviously, Bush is just a puppet, but the elite use him as a gauge or a yardstick, kind of a thermometer, to see what's happening. Looking at this, if they carry out another attack, I think it'll get exposed as an inside job even faster than we've seen with 9/11, but at the same time, it looks like they need an attack to get the Iran attack back on the tracks.
What I'm afraid of living in Japan is that the government over here is really kind of pushing through a number of very, very key legislation. Just in the past couple of years, there have been this mounting kind of forced nationalism. There are flag laws now and national anthem laws where you must stand up and raise the flag at certain ceremonies. Before that, if you want to hoist the flag, the Hinomaru, if you don't, well, that's fine. Now you must. Before, if you wanted to sing Kimigayo, the national anthem, if you want to, that's great. Now,
let me comment on this, because I'm not in Japan, but I've been following it. The Japanese parliament announced, a year ago, that they're talking about developing nuclear weapons. The reports are that they've got a secret nuclear weapons program. They have bought some of the most enriched uranium and plutonium ever developed from the French, literally tons of it. That was 5 years ago, big scandal, and they've openly been talking about going toe-to-toe with China or North Korea. North Korea has been firing test missile, Taipong Dong 2s, into the sea just a few miles from their coastline, threatening them, and it looks like the New World Order is talking about letting Japan militarize as a set piece for some coming conflict with China. Your take on that?
It's true. There are a couple of really important key pieces of legislation. Very soon, there's going to be something called, translated as the National Referendum Act, and if you can believe this, that any change to the Constitution cannot be discussed in the media. I mean, can you fathom this?
And of course, one of the big changes is they're talking about going away from a purely defensive military to an offensive military, and they're citing Bush's preemptive war statements.
Exactly. So Article 9, which states that that military is only for defensive measures, right? There's another piece of legislation that's coming in, being discussed right now, and this is to make the Japanese school children more patriotic. The mandatory elementary, junior, and senior high school, that there will be type of nationalistic curriculum introduced. One of the more scary pieces of legislation is something called I don't really know how to translate it. A legislation that will not allow, if you can believe this, not allow two people to plan some event. That is, if you want to get together with your friends and say, hey, let's plan to have a demonstration, you could be arrested. Or let's plan to have a party, you could be arrested. Two or more people. The idea behind this is, the way that it's being sold, rather, to the people is that, well, hold on a second, this is really purely anti-gangster, anti-mafia, yakuza, anti-crime type of legislation, but the way that it's being written, it can be applied to any normal person wanting to have a peaceful protest. So that's pretty scary.
Now, MacArthur was in Japan for many years, and our government broke it up and basically still has a lot of control over it to this day. So don't think, folks, that Japan is moving into militarization by accident. When you talk to Japanese about this, what's their take on it?
They're very upset. Well, you know, a lot of Japanese don't know about some of this key legislation. This is also quite frightening because there really isn't the free press in this country. The press here is really controlled by, well, whoever. And they are told what to write and how to write it and how to sell it to the people.
Well, then how did this Tokyo Journal piece get out?
Well, now this is interesting. There, of course, there are the foreign media and foreign publications.
So that leaks in.
Yes. But even talking just about the Japanese publications, so you have the quote-unquote legitimate publications, famous Asahi newspaper, Mainichi, etc. And then you have another layer, a lower layer, of a tabloid periodicals that can run all sorts of different stories. And it's really in this layer, these so-called tabloid periodicals, which really have some amazingly hard-hitting stories. And just a couple of months ago, one of them ran a September 11th piece talking about the Pentagon and the Power Hour documentary in plain sight.
So more and more is starting to come out. I want to take some calls, but I want to get your view on the U.S. When you talk to friends and family in New York, what is their view on 9/11 four and a half, almost 5 years later now versus what it was four and a half, 5 years ago?
Well, people are waking up. One of my great joys is that my mother and father now understand that it was a self-inflicted wound. Soon after, you know, my father was praising Bush. He's like, "Hey, this is." Although Tokyo Journal got it wrong. My family, they're lifelong Democrats, not Republicans. But that's why I mentioned my parents, because here you have a lifelong Democrat, and he's saying, "Hey, you know, Bush, you know, we need a strong leader, etc." And now, of course, my father wants him impeached. He wants him, you know, he wants him jailed. Let there be a real investigation. My father is fuming. So is my mother. And now, of course, my brothers and other family members are waking up. And lots of New Yorkers are.
It's the same thing with New Yorkers I know that 2 years ago were mad at me and now know the truth. And I wonder why suddenly it's really becoming accepted.
I don't know. The hundred monkey theory. People are just finally getting a hold of this information and watching it. The loose change, Road to Tyranny, you know, all of your amazing work, martial law, your documentaries. People are making copies of them and handing them out. 3 years ago, I had my first screening of martial law in my apartment. Just, you know, hey, bunch of friends came over, let's just watch it. Gee, can I have a copy of it? Can I make a copy of it? Yeah, Mr. Jones says you can burn your own copies as long as you don't sell them. Wow, amazing. Start spreading that way.
It's wonderful. We're going to take a few calls, Professor, but before we do that, any other key points you want to add that I haven't given you a chance to state?
Well, as a matter of fact, Yumi Kikuchi is putting together the first Tokyo International 9/11 Truth Conference. It's tentatively slated for October 7th. Jimmy Walters is coming, as so is William Rodriguez. I would love you to come if you can make it.
I'd love to, but I'm always tied down here on the home front, here in my command bunker, here in the nest. But I am going to a conference in early June, and then I'm having my own June 24th and 25th in Los Angeles, California.
I wish I could be there.
No, oh, I'd love to see you there. Let's go ahead and take some calls. I'm sure these will be all over the map, but that's okay. Jim in Indiana, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Alex, I had a question for a previous guest you had. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
Okay, it was a couple weeks ago. You had a McCoy on there.
Yes, I had a professor out of Wisconsin about torture and government drug dealing.
Okay, the question I have, that night I had a problem with the radio fading in and out. And
that's just, fine. What's your question?
Okay, on percentage, he said something about the troops in Vietnam and the percentage.
I don't remember the exact percentage, but our government sold high-quality heroin directly to the troops to then have a market back in the U.S.
Okay, I think he said something like 34%. Does that?
I don't remember, sir.
Okay.
And
it sounded like something else, like he said something about fire bases. Does that ring a bell to you or something?
The interview is posted on Infowars.com. I don't remember.
Okay, it is on the Infowars then?
Yes.
Okay. All righty, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the call. That's another example of problem reaction solution. They ship in the narcotics and then fill the prisons up with your children when they use the product the government brings in to begin with, and the very same drug dealers predominantly, I've done a study of this, then own the private prisons and make the money off that. It's totally sick. Let's go ahead and talk to James in Maryland. James, you're on the air. Go ahead. Just hung up. Elias in Michigan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Right. This is concerning phone calls. This phone call is being recorded now by the telephone companies.
That's right.
The whole thing about this is all the calls that are being made on all the phones in the United States, and maybe more, is being recorded by the telephone companies, and the government is paying them to do this. So that every call you have made in the last 4 or 5 years on your phone has been recorded. And is accessible.
Sir, you sound like you just put him on hold. You sound like you just learned this and you're very upset. I don't know how long you've been listening to the show, but in 1996 it was made public that the NSA put offices in every major phone switching company, and everything is run through, and everything is recorded with keywords, and that is admitted, and that is public, and now everyone's freaking out. I'm getting hundreds of emails, literally, because it was in the front page of the USA Today today. Go ahead and finish up your point, sir.
Well, it is not keywords. They are recording all the conversations on all the phones.
Well, that's not my understanding.
It's being held by the telephone company.
That's not my understanding.
They're doing it. Well, I just heard Springer on the radio give his old expose of the whole thing. Okay?
No, they record phone conversations. Put him on hold. They record when they get a keyword, then they start recording, sir. But they are monitoring everything. That's your free society. But you sound upset, so go ahead.
It's not keywords. You keep saying keywords. It is not keywords. They are recording all the conversations. They have the power to do it. They have the megabytes to do it.
Are you angry at me, sir?
And you keep talking about keywords. It's not keywords.
Are you angry at me, sir?
No. You keep talking. I am just trying to correct you because you keep talking about keywords. You always have. And that is not a fact.
Okay.
You don't care about keywords.
Okay. All righty. I appreciate your call.
Mr. Jones, could I add something?
Sure.
On March 15th, the Defense Agency opened up a new 23.4 billion yen wiretapping facility in one of the southern islands of Japan. Their mission has not been disclosed, but there you go. So,
well, you know, I've been studying the National Security Agency and the Echelon and the Infopol 9 system in Europe for a long time, and I wasn't trying to get combative with that caller, but he sounded extremely angry. And yes, they have the computer space to record everything. And they do record quite a bit, but according to my knowledge, and you can believe Jerry Springer if you like, the bastion of fact, and I guess if he said it, it's God's word, but that's not my view. I mean, I'm the guy who took the heat for saying the NSA was listening and recording and hooked into every phone call in the country. I said that 10 years ago because I had the law they passed. So I'm covering everything up, ladies and gentlemen. I've been caught. I mean, it's as if I'm saying the government isn't bad. Professor, sorry that all these calls aren't.
No, not at all. But whether they are recording one word or keywords or the entire conversation, it's illegal.
Yeah, it's illegal. It's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And I never figure out why people don't get upset about something until it's in the front page of USA Today. And I have the USA Today article right here in front of us, and they are admitting that the phone companies are recording the records of the calls, and they're recording parts of the calls, but according to what I know from people that work at NSA, they were not recording everything. But you can't explain that to him, so that doesn't really matter. We're going to come back and take a few more calls. We'll see if John or Tom or Mike or anybody wants to specifically talk to our valiant guest who took action and got the truth out about 9/11 in a big, big way. I know it's frustrating, folks. You can't call up and yell at George Bush. You can't call up and yell at Hillary Clinton. So I'm here. I understand. It's all my fault. I'm covering up for the NSA now. Yes, that's what I've always done. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back after this quick break. I bet when the transponders go in our cars to Texas, I'll get a call saying I'm covering that up, too. I've just been talking about it for 11 years. Stay with us. We'll be right back. My friends, join us in the fight to expose the terrorists before they strike again and use it to fully destroy this country and use America as an engine of world government and domination. Go to InfoWars.com. Get Martial Law, my three-hour 9/11 film I came out with last year, one of the best 9/11 films out there, many have said. Also get the classic 9/11, The Road to Tyranny, almost 3 hours, covering Oklahoma City, the first World Trade Center bombing, 9/11, and the whole police state. Get my book, 9/11, Descent into Tyranny. It's an easy read, about 225 pages. Paul Watson's book, Order Out of Chaos, Elite Sponsored Terror, and the New World Order. Get my videos, make copies. It's having such a huge effect. They're available at InfoWars.com or by calling toll-free 1-888-253-3139. And we've got a big 9/11 conference that I'm sponsoring coming up June 24th and 25th of next month. A lot of big speakers. Go check out details and get your tickets before they're gone at InfoWars.com as well. I didn't ask the professor during the break if he could stay a little bit with us in the next hour, but I know it's like 3 in the morning there now, Japan time, but he's an American living in Japan. Before we go back to John and Mike and Rita and Anthony and others, Doug and others. Professor, you told Kevin, one of my producers, a story about just how subservient the Japanese are, though, about how you came into the class on the first day of school one time and what you did. Will you share that story with us?
Absolutely. This is an experiment that I've done quite a number of times over the course of my 17 year career in Japan. I've done this type of experiment in various different ways. One way is me standing up in front of the class and saying, "Stand up, sit down, stand up, sit down." 10, 15, 20 times, and people are standing up and sitting down. Stand up, raise your arm, or raise your right arm, put your right arm down, you know, type of Simon Says, without any explanation, and everyone does it. And then, okay, sit down, and then I just go on with the lesson. No comment, no question, nothing. They just do it. Other times, I've just sat in my chair at the front of the class and stared at people. Or I sat on the side of the podium, looking, you know, towards the window or towards the wall, the door.
Do you later bring it up to them why you did it to show them?
Well,
how can,
after a couple of times doing this with various classes, saying why. Didn't you think that was strange? And of course, it's, no. Was it supposed to be strange? Well, maybe it was strange, but I'm not sure.
So you have one of the most intelligent, highest IQs, longest-lived population in the world, but they are imperially conditioned through thousands of years to be servants, to follow orders, to slit their wrist if they were ordered to, or jab a sword into their belly if they were ordered to. In the past, they even had the ninja so brainwashed they would commit suicide after doing their one appointed assassination. That way whoever hired the ninja couldn't be caught. I mean, this is incredible. And we see similar brainwashing, but not to the same extent, with imperial conditioning with the English population. We see this time and time again, Professor.
It's true. You know, if you ask me, what do you think about the truth movement really succeeding in Japan? On one day, I'll be very optimistic. On another day, I'll be extremely pessimistic. And one of the reasons is because, for me, Japan is a perfect place for the New World Order. It was made, packaged
for the New World Order to come in and to take over. And, you know, people will just allow it to happen. That's
Professor,
how
I know it's the middle of the night, but will you stay with us 20 more minutes to take calls?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Fantastic. I promise we're going to go to your calls quickly, and you can bring up any topic you want, but it'd be nice if you brought up 9/11, and it'd be nice if you didn't basically bark at me for not covering the NSA properly. I mean, I get attacked for saying the NSA spies on us. Well, it's old news for this audience, but here's the headline. NSA has massive database of Americans' phone calls, your phone records, ladies and gentlemen, and more. We'll be getting into that because it is breaking in the mainstream news. We are joined by Professor John F. Marcuso. He is an American from New York, living for 17 years in Japan. He was instrumental in the research and quoted in a major publication that in Tokyo, in Japan, that exposed 9/11 being an inside job. And right now we're taking your phone calls. He'll be with us for another 20 minutes. Then I'll get into the NSA and all the rest of it. Right now let's talk to John in Virginia. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, man.
Thank you.
Hey, I want to relate this to 9/11 as best I can, but I also have a different subject I'd like
to disagree
with you.
That's fine. Go ahead, sir.
The best I can say about 9/11, I was put in a mental institution by a psychiatrist and a judge in Virginia, and the reason cited in court as a justification for this were that I believe that 9/11 was an act of the U.S. government.
I have seen mainstream articles, it's got to be over 20 times, where people are committed for saying that, and people are even using it in divorce proceedings with people I know in Kansas City and in Los Angeles. People I know personally are having it used against them. Go ahead.
Also that I believe that water fluoridation in the state of Virginia is a very dangerous practice. They also cited that in court.
Funny, the Irish government, a bunch of other major governments have banned it, saying it's poisonous.
Absolutely.
I guess they all need to be put in mental institutions, too.
You know, they drugged me so badly against my will that I couldn't even think or, you know, speak on my own behalf to the
judge.
Well,
the Soviets did that, and now they're doing that in America. Let me get a comment from the professor. Go ahead. Give us your take.
It's outrageous. Thankfully, Japanese don't fluoride their water over here. It's very scary. My heart goes out to this gentleman.
So how did you finally get out? Did you say, I don't believe it was an inside job, I love George W., and they said, you are cured?
You know, you want to know what, Alex? At the point after they had drugged me for a month, I couldn't even hold my own beliefs at that point. And I was agreeing with them because I was so brainwashed by the drugs and stuff.
I'm interested how this happened. How did it, I mean, who reported you? How did they grab you?
Well, there you go. I mean, everything you've talked about with the parents and, the social engineering of society. My mother called the police because I voiced some concerns that the government was watching me due to my political activism, such as standing out on the streets with signs against the CIA and George Bush, which they actually cited. I reported it to the Human Rights
Committee.
Wait
a minute. That was in a newspaper. I remember when you did that.
In Virginia?
I remember another case of a guy who did that, and they grabbed him, and it was in a newspaper.
I was in the newspaper. They had a picture of me, but it wasn't actually because of that specifically.
There was another very similar case then. I think that was in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I have a Supreme Court case pending in the state of Virginia where they actually, the judge initially tried to deny me my right to a jury trial for a malpractice suit for this very reason. I just...
Well, interesting. I appreciate your call.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you. Let's talk to Mike in Ohio. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, hello, Alex.
Yes, sir.
How's Professor John doing?
He's doing fine. You're on the air with him.
Well, saying about this monitoring people's calls, now that we started the war in Iraq, we can't underestimate any of their family members here may be retaliating. I'm saying retaliating.
I don't understand. No. Why don't you explain it to me?
I'm saying that you can't underestimate any Iraqi or Afghanistan people living here trying to retaliate.
So you think the spying is good? It's to keep us safe from the Arabs.
They may retaliate.
Well, stay there. I want to talk to you on the other side. Stay there. So maybe the Fourth Amendment needs to go bye-bye, and maybe it's been bad all along, and George Bush is just saving us. We'll be right back with our guest, the professor, and then we'll let Mike in Ohio finish up about his views on the spying. Then Rita, Anthony, and others. In China, they enslave the people to keep them safe from terrorists and criminals. In Nazi Germany, they did as well. In communist Russia, in Cuba today. It's all for your own safety, your own good. Oh, we have to torture people so Al-Qaeda doesn't attack again. Oh, we have to spy on you so Al-Qaeda doesn't get you. Oh, I'm above the law. I'm President Bush. I don't need warrants to spy anymore, even if they're blank check warrants that are received after the fact from the FISA court. And, of course, what, a year ago, Bush gave speeches saying, don't worry, we don't spy on you without warrants. Then he gets caught spying without warrants. He says, I don't need no stinking warrants, as they say. We're talking to Professor John F. Mancuso. He hails from New York, but now lives for the last 17 years in Japan as a professor there. And he's been exposing 9/11 and gotten a big national piece written up in one of their big publications. And he's been joining us now. We've gotten off into a bunch of other issues. But before we go back to Mike in Ohio, Mike called in and said that, you know, maybe we need this spying because we've got Afghanis and, I guess, Pakistanis and Iranians and Iraqis here in America. They may get us any minute. Well, why do they let them in at unlimited numbers? Why do they have a thing called acing at the airports where foreigners just hold up their papers and walk past the, quote, authorities, but citizens are shaken down? It's a joke. All of this spying and the rest of it is shown to be the fraud it is once you realize that 9/11 is an inside job. But some people will admit 9/11 is an inside job, but then still say that the Arabs are some type of threat. Well, listen, even if they are a threat, I'm a lot more afraid of a tyrannical, centralized government here domestically, history shows, than I should be of some foreigners. But Professor, before we go back to Mike in Ohio, do you want to comment on the things he was saying last segment?
Where do you start? I mean, Mr. Jones, you said it perfectly right. We have to fear the government taking away our guns and our liberties. This is, and of course creating the boogeyman and pointing a finger and saying, hey, they are the ones to blame.
But that's what George Washington and Thomas Jefferson said. They said, don't trust the government. It's the most dangerous. But they're wrong. They didn't face Al-Qaeda. Mike, go ahead and finish up your points from Ohio. I mean, do you disagree with us?
In ways I do. I think you can't underestimate. They may retaliate. I'm talking about people that probably lived here. They're from Iraq or Afghanistan. They have the technical know-how. And personally, I've been threatened by Middle Easterners over the years, so they may retaliate.
Who do you think carried out the 9/11 attacks?
Our own government.
Oh.
But this is a classic. No. This is classic, folks. This is doublethink. And, Mike, you sound like a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know our own governments, and that is small criminal elements, not the whole government, is involved in terror attacks, working with other intelligence agencies, clearly. That's going on. But then at the same time, you're worried the Middle Easterners are going to get you. Well, you've got your Second Amendment to deal with them. And if our own government's carrying out attacks, they'd love to provocateur Arabs into doing it. In 1993, they cooked the bomb, trained the drivers, and really carried out the first World Trade Center attack. So you better be worried about the government actually supporting real homegrown terrorists, sir.
I mean, that's bad. You're right.
This spying is totally un-American.
Well, if Middle Easter places a bomb in a building, what are you going to do?
So, but we have a government that carries out terror attacks. You admit that, but you think that now if they hear a Middle Easterner planning some organic attack, which I'm not saying couldn't happen, there could be real Middle Easterners that might, you know, do something. I think that's on the low end. But the point is, you think the government that will attack us to get control would then stop them with this spying? No, sir. This spying is on peace groups, gun groups, land rights organizations. That's what's in their own handbooks, sir.
So who do we contact if we do get threatened by a Middle Easterner?
Well, you contact the police, sir. If someone threatens you with bodily harm, that's illegal. The NSA isn't going to save you spying on everyone.
I've had Middle Easterners threaten me before over like a 30-year period. And
well,
I've asked people about that. No, that couldn't happen.
Well, I mean, I've never had a Middle Easterner threaten me, but I'm sure Middle Easterners do threaten people.
So who do you go to when they say, well, that couldn't happen?
Well, if somebody threatens me, I'm going to try to defend myself. Listen, I don't dial 911 until I've got the gun in my hand. I'm not going to count on the police to come save me. And they've ruled in court hundreds of times it's not their responsibility.
Well, don't you deny that the Quran does say in a lot of their religion that they have the right to kill anybody for Allah?
But I have actually read a lot of the Quran, sir, and the Quran does have a lot of passages like that, but it also has other passages in it, and they've done national polls in Middle Eastern countries, and on average, 6% of the Muslims are the crazy blow themselves up type, and that's still a big group of people out of 1.2 billion Muslims. But again, sir, I think you're all mixed up. Professor, comments?
You know, I spent a year in Saudi Arabia. This was in 1987, I believe, right after the first Mecca riots. And I was afraid, to be honest with you, I was afraid to go at first. I'd already signed a contract with the Saudi government to go there as an English teacher and an interpreter, English and Spanish, for the Saudi government. I have to say that it was one of the most magnificent experiences of my entire life, meeting not just Saudis, but Kuwaitis and Iraqis and Iranians and, you know, you name people from the Middle East and, of course, Muslim countries in Africa and, of course, North Africa. These are warm, hospitable people. Yeah, you can find horrible elements in every culture. No, I've read the Quran but these are these kind of twisted interpretations of it. The, you know, 99.9% of Muslims are, you know, magnificent people. And I have firsthand since I lived there for a year.
Mike, I appreciate your call, but let me just say this, and I'm not trying to attack Mike, but he thinks the government carried out the attacks, but he wants the government to spy on everybody to keep us safe from Muslims. I went to college with Muslims, I went to high school with Muslims, I lifted weights with Muslims, and I have to be honest with you, I have found them to be some of the nicest, most honest, friendly people. Now, I'm a Christian. Okay, and I'm not out here promoting the Muslim faith. The point is that I've got family that's been in the military and worked over there. I've got family that's worked for oil companies over there. We've had people on like Robert Galen Ross who lived in Saudi Arabia and Iran for many years. And I'm telling you, what you hear from the neocons on talk radio that Muslims want to cut your head off and drink your blood, that is absolute fiction. Professor?
I completely agree. I have never been more welcome in any country than I was when I spent a year in Saudi Arabia. They were magnificent people. The greatest hosts I've ever had the privilege of being hosted by.
Yeah, I'm told they put Texas hospitality to shame.
I was, you know, welcomed when I was in Texas for the couple of days that I was there. It was great.
Point is that any culture that comes out of a dangerous, wild terrain normally, historically, if you look at it at a sociological level, is normally very hospitality-oriented. It's a survival mechanism, and then it gets ingrained in the culture and people.
And the interesting thing about Saudi Arabia is that they consider any foreigner to be their guest, and they treat you as an honored guest. It was the greatest year of my life.
Well, you're not going to hear that from the neocons. So they're just all out to kill us any minute, and we're just it's all over, and they just can't wait to kill us.
And it's sad.
But it's funny, you've got huge Christian populations all over the Middle East, and only where the CIA goes in and radicalizes the Muslims, quote, as an anti-commie arm, is where you get the problems. Let's go ahead and take another call. Let's talk to Rita in Illinois. Rita, go ahead.
Howdy, Alex and Professor. I was just looking at some stuff. I was the one that hung up the other day, but I didn't hear you say, you know, to hang on.
Well, that's okay. We don't. If we missed your call the other day, you're on the air now.
Okay. All right. I've been looking. I taped a lot of things around Y2K, you know, and I had these tapes on the side, and I've been looking at a lot of things that they put out. They've been snitching on themselves. One thing is that I have this gentleman named David Juergen made this documentary for PBS called Commanding Heights where they snitch on themselves all the way through. I thought, wow, if Alex Jones saw this, you could just edit this thing and hang him with it. like Cardinal Richelieu says, give a guy.
Well, do me a favor, send it to him, because in the year and a half before 9/11, they were all over TV saying the terrorists are going to attack. When they attack, you have to give up all your rights. Martial law is good. Is that what's on your tape?
Well, this, not exactly, no. This is where they identify that Vladimir Lenin's, or Lenin said that the big thing that you need is the commanding heights. And they, how they stole it, they go through this whole thing where they go through the entire globe and they're stealing the commanding heights, which is the resources from every nation. The guys who did it, at the end of it all, they says what we've got now is an economy with nobody in control. So it's like this insane economy where no one's in control. But they, also.
Well, I disagree with that. The globalists use modern mercantilism to create a neo-feudalist plantation.
Well, that's their PR anyway, is that how wonderful it was. Every time they destabilize somebody's currency and then get them hooked on the juice loans, they have this magic music, like, you know, a chia plant is growing. Look at it, it's magic. The economy went better after we took it over. And they annihilate every...
Which isn't true. Look at Argentina and everybody else.
It's horrible, but
their
they
own
make
IMF,
it look good on here.
Their own IMF plans brag about how they destroy economies by design.
Oh, it's horrific, but they make it look good. They try to make it look wonderful, but it's obviously not wonderful.
All right.
And they show people revolting all around the world, and then they says, well, we were having some big problems, but then September 11th happened, and what can you do? You know, so now we're back on track.
Okay, and Rita, send me that tape, okay?
It's very fuzzy because I recorded it on SP. I didn't have a very good antenna at the time.
Okay, thank you. Listen, I appreciate your call. Professor, do one more segment with us, and I'll let you go to sleep, but I want to be able to finish up with you. The calls are just, they're always great, but sometimes they just refuse to talk about the topic, which is all right. It takes us in different directions, but I wanted you to be able to finish up on 9/11 and the awakening that's happening all over the planet when we get back, our final segment with the professor. I've got several audio clips concerning Bush being above the law and some of the hypocritical things he's been saying and doing concerning General Michael V. Hayden coming up in the next segment. We'll also get into NSA has massive database of America's phone calls. This from USA Today, itself a whitewash. Our final segment, we'll get to your calls coming up in the next segment, with Professor John F. Marcuso. John, it's been really great having you on. Again, I can only commend you for getting a big national peace done there in Japan. Do you have hope for the future? What do you see happening in the future if you look into your crystal ball?
Wow. That's a tough question. As I mentioned before, you know, it depends upon the day that you ask me. Some days I'm really pessimistic. Other days I'm very optimistic. I think I'm optimistic by nature, however, even though I am a pretty jaded New Yorker. The Japanese are waking up. There's no question about that. And the legislation that is being enacted by the Japanese government to try to quash whatever grassroots movement is taking hold right now is accelerating, is scary. However, just my students and the people that I meet on the street and people that I meet in the train, they know what's happening. They're not shocked anymore when you talk to them about it. They're like, yeah, okay, great. I've seen it. I understand it. So that does give me hope. And it really is, you know, Mr. Jones, and I know that you don't like to be praised, but it is true. People like you, Mr. Watson and all the others out there, that inspired me. That's how I got into all of this. I saw your documentaries, took a look at your website, listened to you on the GCN network, via the internet feed. So you are really the inspiration, and so people like you getting other people involved, so that does give me hope.
Well, Professor, it's statements like that that make me feel good at a certain level, but at another, it's a great weight. It's like the little statement in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And I just want the listeners to realize that many of you are smarter than I am, you're more informed than I am, you're more eloquent than I am, and, you know, be like the good professor. get out there, start informing others. You know, the first 50 newspapers he called, and the next 50 laughed at him or hung up on him about 9/11, but then he found one of the biggest publications in the country that said, show me the facts, show me the evidence, the show-me state, like Missouri, and he did show them, and so it's woken up millions more people. And look at Dylan Avery, some 22-year-old film student, throws a documentary together, does a lot of great research, and now tens of millions have downloaded it. Millions and millions of copies have been made. You know, the guy only sells a few thousand copies, but then tens of millions of copies get made. We're having an effect. We're exposing these criminals. Remember, they're arrogant. They think we're stupid. They think they're only going to win. I got news for them. They can keep reapplying their lies every day. Once somebody's eyes are open, there's no going back. Once you turn somebody on to the truth, there's no going back. And that domino effect has already been triggered. And I know we're going to win this thing. There's going to be hard times ahead. But in the end, the good guys always do come out on top, because evil implodes because of its own nature, its own weight. And, Professor, I commend you. Now, I guess, what's the best way for people to find, we have a link to it right now on Infowars.com, but what's another way for people to find the Tokyo Journal?
Well, it's Tokyo, it's TokyoJournal.T as in Tom O, TokyoJournal.to. Well, just, you know, Google Tokyo Journal.
Tokyo Journal 9/11, and you'll find it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you get some sleep. Are you going to be teaching students at college tomorrow?
Yes. I have to get up in 2.5 hours.
Where do you live in Tokyo?
Right, well, in a place called Kunitachi. You know, Tokyo is a huge megalopolis. Goes on for about 60 miles. Around, and I live in a small suburb of the city.
How long does it take for you to get to work?
Oh, no, I essentially live on campus, so I just basically roll out of bed and say, well, look, I'm sorry, I was talking to, you know, Alex Jones last night, so forgive me for not shaving.
Well, Professor, we really appreciate you joining us. What's it like living in smaller accommodations than we do here in the U.S.?
You get used to it. You get used to it. And you get to know your neighbors really well.
How big's your house?
Probably about as big as your bathroom. It's not very big at all. About 50 square meters, which,
wow.
I'm not sure what that is in feet.
Well, you know, no matter how big your house is, they say you always end up living in two rooms anyways.
I believe that.
All right. Professor John F. Marcuso, thank you for joining us. Thanks for your courage.
Mr. Jones, it was a pleasure.
We'll talk to you again in the future. God bless. We'll come back and into a bunch of other news and your calls. Stay with us.